Howdy, y'all, and welcome to the Ears Podcast, produced by Terrier TV and sponsored by Edna Wilson with Celebrate Real Estate. Celebrate, dag nabbit, man. Celebrate Remax Aerospace. Miss Edna Wilson's pretty awesome.
Yep.
I hope she'll forgive me for butchering her. I've butchered it every time at this point.
If she doesn't forgive you, you're in a lot of trouble because you've got a lot of strikes against you.
This is true. Well, we end up talking about it an extra amount of time, so
that's
I think
true.
It makes
it does.
Up for it.
It does make up for it. We do then, it does segue into a nice little conversation about Edna and her business.
And then I usually just blame Cindy for it anyhow, so it's all good.
That's right. It is Cindy's fault.
Everything's Cindy's fault.
You know what? Everything's my fault. Yeah. I accept
it. All right.
That's
fair enough. So I feel like it's a nice opportunity to go ahead and start the podcast and discuss what we discussed about midway through the last one, and saying that the Ears Podcast, while not always about environmental things, that's not exactly our purpose behind the podcast. We're trying to give people, organizations, and causes a voice for what they're doing and what they're up to. And while our last one was an environmental organization, today isn't.
Yeah.
And that's not, again, the purpose is to kind of get the Ears name out there and be able to let people talk about things they're up to.
Right. We're about the community, not just exclusively the environment.
Oh, that was very nice, Bill.
Thank you.
And you know what? My argument is always that agencies like what we have today that help people in the community, that's not entirely separate from our environment. Our environment is made up of, yes, the plants and the animals, but also the people.
The environment's what you make of it. Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's a community is an environment. Is basically what you're saying. Am I correct, Cindy?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, you're amazing. That's how that goes.
Thanks for saying it for me.
Yeah, she's always making things happen. All right, you ready to discuss our guest today?
Let's do it.
So today on the podcast, we are joined by the third yacht in the series. Were they all in season two?
Yeah, I think so.
They might have all been in season two. We were joined by Matt Yaunt, who was a previous teacher of the year here in Brevard County.
Right.
And then we were joined by his wife, Stacy Yaunt, who is a special needs teacher.
I think Stacy was on first, though.
She was first. Okay, yep. She's a hearing impaired teacher.
Yep.
And Matt, former teacher of the year. And then now, today, we are joined by Richard Yaunt, Matt's younger brother, who runs the Boys and Girls Club. He's the Senior Development Officer for the Boys and Girls Club of Central Florida.
Boys and Girls Clubs.
Clubs.
Come on, I read the email. I know how
it
goes.
No, I butchered. No, I said club instead of clubs.
Yes.
I didn't make it plural. You guys are doing great.
No,
I'm trying.
I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for
being
here,
buddy. Sounds like season two is crushing it.
We're doing pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah. We're pretty full of yachts. That's for sure.
We are full of yachts. Yeah. It's been an ongoing joke with the yacht family that when one of them does something, next thing you know, they're all flipping involved. It's like it's not one of them. They take it over. There might be 10 people in this little organization, whatever it might be. Like maybe it's fantasy football. And next thing you know, this started off with one yacht. And next thing you know, there's seven yachts of the 10 people. So it's just what they do. They just take things over. It's just how it works.
Well, there we go.
Well, hey, we've got some good folks in our lives who push us in the right direction, and lucky to have my older brother Matt as somebody who I looked up to for a long time and brought me down to the area because I'm an out of towner originally. So,
Matt's been a blessing to a lot of people, a lot of students, and a lot of people, myself included as well. So, tell us a little bit about the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Florida, what it means to be a senior development officer, and what you're up to these days, bub.
Sure, thanks, Frank. Appreciate it again for the opportunity to be here. So Boys and Girls Clubs, we're an after-school and summer program. We work, essentially with at-risk youth. We put our clubs and communities, where our resources and the programming that we offer are needed most. So essentially, we have, different programs that we offer that range from focused on academic success, good character and citizenship, and healthy lifestyles. On paper, our focus is making sure that young people who enter our program, are able to have the tools and opportunities that they need to be able to reach their full potential. It's challenging for young people all over the world, all over the community, and our hope is that, if they're provided with the love and support and guidance of people who care about them, they're given the opportunity to be in a safe, positive environment. and you know they're filled with you know lessons and motivation, and you know again are pushed in the right direction to stay on the right track so they can reach their goals. You know that's what our hope is as an organization. So we see kids from 6 to 18. You know, so we start working with kids when they enter elementary school, and they have the opportunity to continue through our program until they graduate. And our hope again is that they'll leave our program with a plan for their future, which could be anything from going to college, you know, a typical four-year institution, you know, going to a community college, getting a certification or going to vocational school or joining the military. So, you know, we want them to have a plan for what the next step is for them, because as you and, you know, adults and most people know, if you don't have a plan, it's really easy to get lost in the shuffle. Mm-hmm. You know, so essentially, you know, it's guidance, it's mentorship, it's fun. You know, it's up to us to make sure that the program is compelling enough for the kids to want to come back, because we all know that there's a lot of distractions in the world where people can get off track, or young people can get off track. So, you know, really, we just try to pour into our kids and make sure that they've got the opportunities and support they need to be successful.
So you've been with this organization now for how long?
I've been with Boys and Girls Clubs. It was 10 years in October last year.
That's amazing, man. So tell us a little bit about you and your journey from starting off with the Boys and Girls Clubs to where you are now with it.
Sure. Yeah. So I've 10 years, you know, about half of that was kind of more on the operational side. So I moved down to Florida from Virginia. I grew up in Northern Virginia and came down here because I wanted to be a teacher. I played a little bit of football in college. And then, you know, once I came down here and moved to town, you know, I said, hey, I want to be a football coach. You know, I started becoming a substitute teacher and then found a part-time job at the Boys and Girls Club, which at the time I knew nothing about. You know, I looked it up online and I saw the intention and focus of it was to work with at-risk youth. I was, you know, intrigued, you know, very much so by the opportunity of, you know, being able to work with young people who could benefit from mentorship and people who cared about them. I was really fortunate to have, and I mean, you know, my family, Frank, you know, it's caring people who are supportive and push you to things that you know, would be enjoyable for you, you know, in your life, but also, you know, so you can reach your goals. And by no means, I mean, neither of my parents graduated from college. You know, we didn't have everything we ever needed in the world, but, you know, I'm grateful to have had good leadership as far as learning right from wrong and treating people the right way. And, you know, I started working at the Boys and Girls Club part-time. After about a year and a half, I became a service director, so a club director of our club in Melbourne, down here in Florida, which was in the middle of a public housing development. It's called the Temple Terrace Community, which is off of Aurora, over Aurora and Wickham Road. And really, it was 3 or 4 of the best years of my life, you know, to be quite frank with you. Quite frank.
That's the second time in 2 episodes.
Second time, yeah.
Wow. You know, just a pleasure to work with really good kids who enjoyed coming to the club. And we had a really great culture of people who, you know, just leaned into what the kids wanted to learn about and made sure that they knew that we were here for them and would go to at length to make sure that, you know, they had the support they needed. So for the last 5 years, I've switched over to a development role, so resource development. So now I work with our board of directors. I work with connecting community to our club, which ranges from fundraising to volunteer opportunities to corporate engagement, and you know various things that help make sure that we can keep the lights on and the doors open for our kids.
Now, speaking of that, the idea that popped into my head, lights on and the doors open. Do you guys own your own facilities or are you in cooperation with other people? How are you doing that?
Yeah, great question, Bill. So we've got 40 clubs in 6 counties. So each club is a little different and has their own circumstances. So the club that I started working with in Melbourne is essentially it's a small facility located in the middle of a public housing development. So it's owned by the local HUD. And is given, or, you know, we have the ability to run that program there. So we don't own that facility. In contrast to that, we have another facility that opened up maybe in 2016, 2017 in Cocoa. We own that facility. It's off of Dixon Road in Route 1, 2-story, you know, has the ability to serve about 100, 120 kids there. So it really depends on the facility. You know, we have a few what we call flagship clubs across our organization. We're actually one of the biggest Boys and Girls Clubs organizations in the country. So we're really grateful that we have this community support that we do, and also the leadership team that's gotten us to this point. But, you know, we have some really big facilities that serve a lot of kids. We're grateful that we're able to make the impact we do. And some of those are, again, ones that we own, and some are in partnership with either, like, we have a big partnership with Orange County Public Schools. So we have maybe 13 or 14 programs in middle schools. We call it our after school zone, where we're able to serve a lot of teens there. And, you know, again, various communities have different circumstances.
So what kind of stories have you seen kids go through, and has your organization, since you've been with it, has there been any, like, kids that really you saw this make a huge difference in their life while they were with you? Like, maybe one or two you can think of specifically that you go, okay, this group, our group doing this and having these after school activities kept this kid specifically, you know, out of trouble, or, you know, focused on the right things, or maybe to college when he wasn't expecting it, or.
Yeah. I'm happy to share some stories, Frank. I mean, I'm really blessed to have a lot of wonderful stories with some great kids who, you know, when I talk about my experience in the club with the kids, you know, it's really just so, it was such an eye-opening experience to work with such young people that have so much potential, you know, and come from some really significant challenges. And, you know, when I first came to the club, there was a couple kids that, you know, I'd love to share with you about. But, you know, one in particular, when I first started working there, I was the teen coordinator. So I worked with the teenagers. You know, mind you, I'm 22 years old at the time I got this job. So I'm just figuring out what it means to be an adult myself. But, you know, there's this young man who is 16 at the time, 16 or 17, and, you know, maybe sophomore, junior in high school. And, you know, I'm coming in trying to figure my way around, you know, how do I build trust and provide quality guidance. And, you know, young man comes from a circumstance where he had two younger siblings at the club. They all lived with their father, and his mother died in a car accident when he was younger. And his two half siblings, their mother died of a drug overdose when they were sleeping in the room next door. Which was probably 2 years prior to my meeting him and coming to work at the Boys and Girls Club. So by the time I got here, he was, you know, already committed. You know, he was making the sacrifices, coming in volunteering. He was, you know, good kid, doing the right things, just trying to get to those last few steps of junior year, senior year. And, you know, really it was, I mean, just me being the guy that was kind of like, hey, you know, I'm here for you. You know, I came in every day. And, you know, we'd stay open late for him, finish his homework. You know, they didn't have some resources at home, so, you know, he could use our technology in the teen center. You know, we would do, like, field trips to his school to, you know, go watch his basketball games. He was on the varsity basketball team at O'Galley High School. And just like one of these kids who was a rock star kid but didn't have a lot of support at home, you know. So he made a commitment to my supervisor at the time that he said, you know, I'm going to keep coming back to the club because I want to get a scholarship and I want to go to college. And, you know, my supervisor, before I became the service director, says, you know, you make that commitment to me, I'm going to make the commitment to you that we'll get you the scholarship. She said that in full faith that we could come through, but there really wasn't necessarily a roadmap internally in the organization to be able to fulfill that promise. But we knew that we would get the work done to get it from outside resources. All that to say, I became service director, which was incredible. I continued to work with this young man. We had the opportunity to get some funding to get him to go tour some colleges. You know, I mentioned he was doing really good and on the right track. So, you know, he got accepted to some schools. We took him to one college, and it was, you know, him and I. We had a hotel, and I reached out to some professors and some different things like that to kind of get the full experience. And while we were getting ready to go out to, like, one of the college bars, just, you know, to go get lunch or whatever, after we did the tour, maybe 2 weeks prior to this, I had gotten the news from our organization. We filled out an application for him to get a full scholarship from the Boys and Girls Club organization. There was a donor. who wanted to stay anonymous and wanted to create this scholarship. And we put in the application without him knowing, and he got the scholarship. So talk about just awesome moments for me. You know, I was so proud of him. He put in the work, he earned the scholarship, but we were just really happy for him. But we went to this tour at the school. You know, we're getting changed, getting ready to go out and put a nail in this thing. Like, okay, this is where you're going to go, right? And I'm going to tell him about the scholarship. He gets a call from his younger sister who's here in Florida. And we're out of town at the school. And she shared that his father had been arrested for drug dealing, and he got in a shootout with the police. So, you know, he's as far away as he's ever been from home. And, you know, he's dealing with his family falling apart, right? You know, so to be in that moment with him going through that hardship, and you know, just to kind of tell him, like, you know, this isn't what you are, you know, this is not what your name will be remembered for because of the great things that you'll be able to accomplish. And you know, he ended up going to school, graduating, and you know, is in town here, and, you know, has a good job, and is doing the right things. So he's a good example of, you know, that stick-to-itiveness that, you know, you want out of a young person, especially when, you know, they have some things stacked against them. And I was just grateful to be a part of it. I mean, he's an awesome kid, but, you know, one of many that I'm proud to have had a relationship with who came out of the club and are doing good things.
Imagine that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, man. Some of my highlights of my life have been at the Boys and Girls Club, and I'm really blessed to be able to work for an organization where I can feel like I can make a difference.
That's great. So explain
if
to us.
If you don't know this already, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think you need to hear this. If you don't hear it enough, I can't tell you how amazing the work is that your agency does. For a lot of these kids, you are it. You are the only people that are showing them that there's something more, that somebody believes in them.
Thanks, Cindy. That means a lot. Yeah, we talk about this from time to time at the club, that some of our kids are in our buildings with our staff people more than they're home. You know, like, we're, especially during the summer months, you know, we're open from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Kids come in, they get breakfast, lunch, and supper. You know, they're there for full days. You know, they go home and sometimes play around outside before it gets dark, and then, you know, they go to sleep, come right back to the club. So we totally understand the responsibility that we have, you know, with the amount of time that we spend with these young people. So I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, y'all's influence on the youth in every community you're in, it's tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous.
To have that resource.
So are there any kind of programs that you guys have going on here in Central Florida that you guys want to specifically talk about?
We've got a lot of stuff going on. Yeah, I'm always impressed with the things that our kids are doing. You know, we've got something that we're really focused on as an organization is, you know, our academic success is the priority for us, right? We want our kids to make sure they're caught up to speed and able to take on the world after that. So there's some things we're doing in the literacy space, which, you know, we've gotten hit as a community, and I say community, it's, you know, all across the world probably, but you know, the pandemic was a challenge for a lot of people. It was specifically a challenge for low-income kids and low-income families. So we've seen that literacy scores have taken a hit, and we find ourselves in a position to try to take the mantle and say, hey, this is something we should really be focused on. So, you know, we've done a couple things, including adding some people to our leadership team, adding some people in the clubs who are focused on literacy for youth and for teens, to make sure that, you know, they have the support they need, and you know, there's people in their lives that are pushing them towards being proficient in these areas. Beyond that, our arts is something that we're really focused on too. You know, so I say this is, you know, it's important for us to have kids coming in the club. You know, if there's young people that are hearing this and you're passionate about music, or you're passionate about dance, or you're passionate about fine arts, you know, these are things that we offer in our club. So it's sometimes difficult for young people to get access to these types of programs, particularly those young people who live in communities where we work. You know, so if that's something that's interesting to you, you know, pop in to your Boys and Girls Club. We got three here in Brevard County. There's one in Titusville, about a mile and a half from here. There's another in Cocoa, which I mentioned, and the one I used to work at in Melbourne. So feel free to come in, you know, find something that you can grab a hold of, and you'll meet somebody who cares about you, wants the best for you.
What's y'all's website?
Our website's www.bgccf.org. That's Boy Girl Club Central Florida, bgccf.org.
Okay.
You can find all kinds of stuff in there about our programs, about how to get in touch with us, about ways that you can volunteer if you'd like to become a volunteer and come in and be a part of the work we're doing, and how you can be supportive if you want to make a donation.
That's amazing, buddy. I know, you know, when you joined this 10 years ago, I remember hearing when you first came down here, your brother telling me that you joined the Boys and Girls Clubs, and I went, okay. I'm like, you know what? I think that's Richard's jam. And I imagine at the time you probably didn't think you were going to make a career out of it, but it's becoming a career for you, buddy, and you're blowing it up. It's awesome.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I love it. I'm grateful to do work that I feel is important. I'm even more grateful to work with people who share a similar mindset and are good people to work with. And we're doing good things every single day, and it's something new every day too, so it keeps me on my toes.
We've talked about it a lot here. One, that some of the most, the people that are the best in their field have seen things from a many different directions on the way up. And two, it seems like a lot of people that are very successful are either previous coaches or previous players of sports.
Yes. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So is there something maybe you brought from the William and Mary football field, you know, or coaching growing up that you've brought to your work now?
You know, so I guess a couple things. So first thing I'll say is, you know, I was like a zero stat guy. I played my freshman year, and I got cut after my freshman year. After that, I started doing like some internships, physical therapy and sports medicine, helping around with the team. So I kind of stayed involved. So two things is, one, definitely hard work. You know, it is hard work to manage a full course load and then get up in the morning to watch film and do team meetings and go to practice. Like, that was tough for sure. The second thing, you know, I'll say is that what it taught me is, you know, opportunities come every once in a while, and if there are young people like that I'm working with, so like I took that experience for me, and I see these young people who are just full of potential, like I shared, and, you know, I want them to know, like, now's the time, you know, it's your opportunity to take this world, you know, by the horns and, you know, go become the best you that you can be, because you may not have a second chance at it. So some of those things that I learned, you know, obviously hard work pays off and all that stuff. But, you know, just trying to use that as fuel to be inspiration to the young people I work with.
That's great, buddy. So I gave you a little bit of homework.
Some homework.
Yep. I gave you some homework.
All right. I got some numbers.
All right. Cindy's up on this one. I think it's time for her time
to
belly up at the bar.
This is Cindy's time to shine.
Yep. Cindy's been struggling for a couple, so it's her time to see if she can blow this up.
All right. Let's see how I did. These aren't so fun. I'm sorry. I don't know if,
buddy,
I should have made these more fun.
I don't think trivia has to be fun.
Nah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. It's about winning. It's not about fun.
It's about winning. All right. So the first one. That's a bad one to start with. All right, first one. We're gonna start with, what percentage of Florida third graders are reading at grade level?
Oh,
you're the teacher, Bill.
40%.
Yeah, I would go with 40%. Yeah,
I would say slightly higher, but not by a whole lot.
It is slightly higher. It's 52% are reading at grade level. So they do testing, as you guys know, you're in the school system. And if I guess it's like 1 through 5, 5 is mastery, 4 is proficient, 3 is satisfactory. It's only 25% that are at the mastery or proficient level, but 52% are at grade level. So we got half our kids around here that, you know, aren't reading at the level which they should be.
Right.
So we find that as a problem at Boys and Girls Clubs. Obviously, we talked a little bit about the work that we're doing in the youth literacy space. So that's why I shared that one. But
for sure,
you know, a lot of that we've seen some spikes. I think if you look back at data in the last 5 years, those numbers improved a little bit, and then we're kind of back to where we were in like 2017. So you know, I think the hope is that we'll kind of get back towards some spaces that we might have been in 2019, as we, you know, separate from the hardship that came from the pandemic with a lot of the kids in school.
Is that what that's contributed to? I mean, is,
oh,
what,
yeah.
is that what
no,
you think
it has
is?
Changed so yeah. much with just the students' attitudes and you know, think about like when you had a summer vacation and you came back and how much that you had lost just in the 2 months that you were out of summer vacation.
If you weren't keeping track of it, yeah, for
right,
sure. Yeah.
Right. And, yeah. And multiply that by not being out of school for, you know, 4 or 5 months, and, you know, then being allowed to possibly take your classes from home, which may or may not have gone real well.
That's funny. You know, we me and you and Cindy have talked about so many times, and with people on here, the effect it had on organizations and businesses. But mm-hmm. sometimes I think that what happened to students during that time kind of gets lost on everybody.
We're in danger of losing a group of them. Mm-hmm. We really are. I mean, it's right now we've got, there's a segment of the high school population that's looking for a test score to graduate. And
wow.
And it's a pretty big number. And we've always had a smaller number, and it just seems bigger now. It seems bigger.
Yikes.
Okay. Yeah, and there's
a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And it is a lot. And it's you know, even more drastic when you break it down into, you know, income levels and,
right.
and racial groups. And, you know, it's something that you're probably familiar with, Bill, but they call it the summer slide. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's something we actually work on at Boys and Girls Clubs. We have a program called Summer Brain Gain, you know, so we're trying to make sure that the kids who are in our clubs are, you know, constantly involved in academics, even though it's not necessarily just, you know, sitting working on multiplication tables. But we're trying to make it fun, but keeping educational content in front of them in the months when they're out of school.
Right, right. Now, during the pandemic, you guys just shut down, right?
There was 3 months we were shut down, totally and completely. But during some of that span, we were doing virtual programming. We were doing some different things to keep in touch with our families and support them in the ways that they needed to. And then after 3 months, so this would have been like June 2020, we opened back up. But we drastically decreased the number of children we were serving. We were originally doing 20 kids to one staff person. CDC, if you remember, came out with like 10 in a room. So we were doing 9 students to one staff person. So that was difficult for us. You know, not only have we never closed our doors, we've been around for 78 years, and we'd never closed our doors or stopped services. So that was challenging itself. But then again, having to go back to some families who wanted to be in the club and, you know, utilize our services, and we had to, you know, tell some that, you know, unfortunately, we can only take the kids who are coming the most, utilizing the services the most. So yeah, difficult time for us. And, you know, we're still, like we've talked about, trying to climb our way out in a couple different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Hit us with the next one, buddy.
All right. We're going to go.
Ugh. That's some good information, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
I think you didn't give yourself enough credit. That was a great question. That was a great question.
Thanks. I appreciate
that. Any question that can lead to more conversation is always a great question.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's where it's at, buddy.
William and Mary taught me how to do homework, I guess. Huh? all right. So another bummer of a question. Percentage of high school students reported feeling persistently sad or hopeless in 2021.
53%.
I'm going to say 50. I'd hope it's less, but I dear goodness gracious.
I'll go
gracious.
To 40. I'll say it's less. Yeah, I'll say 40.
It is 44%. So nearly half of high school students reported feeling persistently sad or hopeless in 2021, which is a 40% increase since 2009. And 1 in 6 reported making a suicide plan in the past year. Heavy.
Oh, wow.
Sorry.
Wow.
That
but
is heavy.
Young people are challenged emotionally right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you ask yourselves why that might be.
How do you approach that from your position?
So, I mean, so we're constantly in conversations, you know, with the young people that we work with. And, you know, we hear stories and circumstances like I just shared with you about the young man who I was working with. You know, and to be really honest, you know, we aren't, you need a professional, you know, somebody who works in social services or as a therapist to be able to work with young people who are dealing with the type of trauma like I just shared with you. So first and foremost, there's training that we're doing for our staff to make sure we're most prepared we can be without having, you know, the proper licensing to be a professional, you know, counselor. But most prepared we can be to be able to have those conversations. We know how to redirect or who we need to bring into these conversations if there's something we hear that's going on. Which includes everything from counselors to referrals to therapists to getting in touch with DCF if there's something that needs to happen on that side of things. You know, but beyond that, we're seeking partnerships with different people in the community. We do have one kind of pilot program that we have as an organization, where we have a counselor come in, who is specialized in this space to be able to set up appointments with young people that we hear that there are challenging things going on at home. You know, so there's a variety of things that we're trying to do. You know, it's one of the things that's a focus for us, but it's a constant climb, you know, to get to where we want to be.
All right.
Next one?
Yes, sir.
All right. Oh, geez.
Goodness gracious, man. You have a basic understanding of an organization, and then when you really start to get into the detailed conversation about everything they're doing,
mm-hmm.
you realize, holy moly, man, that's some serious heavy lifting going on.
That's a lot of stuff to deal with.
That is some serious heavy lifting going on. So, yeah.
For those of us that are listening that might be involved with agencies that could partner, if an agency does want to partner, who is the contact person?
You could reach out to me, and you know, I'm sure we can share the information, maybe the notes of the podcast or something
for
like that to get in touch.
Yep, for sure.
And I've got a great colleague, my counterpart out here in Brevard County. Her name is Erin Harvey, and she does really great work in the community. So she may be somebody I put you in touch with as well.
Okay,
perfect.
That's great. Yeah, we'll make sure we include that when it comes down to it.
All right. Number of children. So how many percentage of children in Florida are living below the federal poverty line?
60%.
I think that's a fair guess.
Go 40.
All right. So this one's kind of a trick question. All right, guys. So it is 17% of children in Florida who are living below the federal poverty line. I say it's a trick question because this was a threshold that was created in the 1960s. And you hear that number and you say, okay, 17%. That means, okay, 17% of kids, which is still a lot. I mean, that's
right. Well, yeah.
Yeah, almost 2 out of 10 kids that you would see in a classroom are dealing with financial hardship at home. You know, and then where does that lead? That leads to social, you know, emotional, you know, challenges. That leads to, you know, health issues. That leads to academic success challenges. There's all kind of things if you don't have resources at home. But it's an outdated figure. It's not a localized number, and it doesn't take into account, you know, local expenses, you know, different things that a family in a particular community might be challenged. So the threshold for 4 children, a family of 4 is like 27,000. And that's the same in New York City as it is in Brevard County. So it's not really a fair number to look at, right? So there's another figure that came out. It's called ALICE is the word that they use. It's an acronym. Stands for Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. So these are families that have an employed person in the home. Usually they're in the service industry or retail industry, which we have a lot of that in the state of Florida. So if the question is how, a next question, so this is my fourth stat, what percentage of children qualify as an ALICE family? So they're living below the ALICE thresholds.
I believe that number is close to 60%.
Yeah, it'd be 50 or 60, I'd say.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
It's 56. Yeah, so you guys are right on. So this is a number that is a better reflection of, I think, what we think about when we say, what does it mean to live in poverty? You know, these are families or kids that don't know maybe where their next meal is coming from, that if there was some interruption in income to the family, it would have some significant impact to, you know, the resources and opportunities and things that they'd be able to do as a family, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. Nearly 60%. So 6 out of 10 kids are dealing with some financial stress in the household, which is just an indication to me of the need of, you know, a program like Boys and Girls Clubs or, you know, people to pour into children these days, at least.
Oh, no doubt. If it wasn't for you guys, where'd they be getting it from?
Yeah.
All right, buddy, we got time for one more. Hit us with one more.
Last one.
These are really good, Richard.
Thanks, Frank. I appreciate it. So last one is related to our arts programming, which I talked a little bit about. So percentage of youth from low-income communities who participate in arts programming.
Hmm.
20%.
Yeah, that's
33%.
Good guesses. Yeah, 29. You guys are good. You guys are really getting close on all these. Yeah, 29%. And, you know, that includes...
That's good, though. I mean, that, it's, I think that's a good
pretty
number.
Good. Yeah. 29. It's a good, you know, number. That's pretty good. That does take into, I think, that so that includes, like, school, like, arts programming, music, different things like that. These are the first...
Is that typical across the board? Or is that lower than normal, I wonder? I wonder.
So when I look at that number, you know, I'm by no means... I enjoy drawing. I enjoy messing around with music. I'm by no means a talent in any way, but it's something for me that's always been, you know, if I can kind of turn my brain off a little bit, you know, I have the luxury of just mm-hmm. doing something I enjoy, and finding peace for a moment doing something like the arts, right?
Yeah.
Passion, right? So 30% of low-income kids have access or are currently in these types of arts programming. Related to this, you know, there's some statistics that show that there's a, if you're involved in arts programming, there is a correlation to, you know, an increase in your academic achievement. You're 74% more likely to have a plan to go to college. And there's an 18% decrease in serious crime rate for students who participate in arts programming. So
incredible.
If you have access to arts, you know, you're doing less negative, maybe, activities, and you're planning for your future, you're committed to your own success. So that's why we believe as an organization, it's important for young people, despite where you come from or what community you're in, to have access to something that is, a benefit for you.
Richard, this has been amazing.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, buddy. Super thankful for you and your organization. Wow. So tell everybody one more time how to find you on how to find you guys on social media or on the website.
Yeah, I mean, we have Facebook, Instagram. It's, you know, all Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Florida. Our website's www.bgccf.org. A lot of good information out there, a lot of great stuff going on in the clubs, and we'd love you guys to be a part of it.
Okay, and if people want to be associated with what you guys are doing in your organization, we'll make sure we have that tagged in all the details when we post this. So, buddy, really appreciate you. Super proud of you and what you're doing. Bill, I have a request that from now on we turn the bass up on my voice so I start sounding a little bit more like this.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll get right on that.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, buddy, it's a blast. Thank you so much for you and what you do, and we appreciate you, Bubba.
My pleasure.
All right, guys. Thank you all for tuning in. Cindy, thank you for being virtually here. We super appreciate that, of course.
Thank you for putting up with my crazy schedule.
Hey. Things happen, or sometimes you got to run, and you know, it's it is what it is. We just we have a great thing going. You know, it's a great, yep. great thing going. Absolutely. Blessed to be doing it and having amazing people for guests, and it just continues. So, anyhow, thank you all for tuning in. We appreciate you guys being here, and we'll see you all next week. Bye bye.